Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermès, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Welcome to the Story Studio. Oh yeah, here we go. Check it out now.
Welcome to the Story Studio, a podcast where an independent publishing company explores the world of self-publishing, independent art, and the future of storytelling. My name is Luke Condor with K, and I'm joined by my regular co-host, Mr.
Daniel Wilcox.
How's it going, man? You all right?
I'm all good. How are you?
Not too bad, not too bad. Have you been writing? What have you been doing? What have you been up to?
I've had a bit of a slow writing week, actually, this week. Just one of the hazards of having a full-time job as well as writing, just sometimes it sucks into it. But yeah. I won't go into all the specifics. But I've got a lot of stuff that I want to write and just not the time to do it at the minute. So I'm aiming to have a nice splurge next week, all over the walls.
Yeah, me too. I mean, jobs will get in the way. That's just how it is, I'm afraid.
We should do an episode just about jobs and writing in jobs.
Yeah, sneakily writing during while she's trying to work.
Have you ever done?
so I've done stuff like so I've got my notes app out and I've made like notes and stuff on my phone as I'm sort of doing stuff, and also like when I'm preparing for a podcast or something, I might jot ideas down or something like that. But I don't think I've ever. Not recently, anyway, being able to just sit down and actually write. Because, like, Ed's there, like, you know, working with me. You're like, what are you doing? Just writing a little horror story.
just killing people in my mind.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I'm kind of the same, really. Like, I've written blog posts and stuff when I've been at work because they're only just short bits that, you know, you can spew out. But I know I've got a chunk undisturbed, even if that's 10-15 minutes to whatever, but if I'm doing it at work, I know that at any moment I could get disturbed by someone wanting something, and to have to kind of like come out of that zone and be like, what can I do for you, Kat? It's a bit weird.
Also, like, so doing fresh copy, but like I can edit, I can like read through stuff quite easily and sort of you know, delete stuff and kind of proofread it in my head, but again, you do need that sort of flow state to sort of you'll be undisturbed whilst you're doing it.
I feel like it'll be quite disjointed if you keep getting disturbed and jumping back in. It just probably take a bit more editing.
So have you got a big whoop?
My big whoop for this week is I had a book come out Monday with someone that's come on the podcast before, Mr. Jay Thorne, the king of collaborators, who he has the American Demon Hunter series that he's worked with quite a lot of people on, and he spoke a little bit about that on the show. And I've added my chapters to that ever-growing story with some cool people. So that came out on Monday. It's currently available on Amazon for, I think it's 99p for the week. So by the time this airs, which is tomorrow, it should still be there if you guys want to grab it. But it was a cool experience writing in someone else's pre-created world. But yeah. It was definitely a challenge.
Yeah, writing with someone else's IP. I always felt like that. Like, if you were going to write for Marvel or, you know, something like that, you kind of have to learn how to use their characters or writing their characters' voices. I imagine it can be quite weird.
Yeah, it's very... There's a specific way of doing it, and as you're writing, whereas yeah. with our books, it was a case of, let's just write what comes naturally, let's follow yeah, the story. Yeah. It's sort of X amount of words, you have a rise, X amount of words, you have a fall, because it very much follows the model from the story grid.
Yeah.
In how the whole okay. structures. Yeah, yeah. 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 So I was a bit more conscious of the actual rises and falls, but yeah, I don't know if that's yeah. for a better story or not, but I enjoyed it nonetheless.
So the only book Stephen King ever like outlined, like properly outlined, was Insomnia. That's what he says anyway. Mm. But Insomnia's got like such a fantastic ending. And like, yeah. But then again, Insomnia is the book that most people don't like. I don't know. I don't know if it works or not, but it depends on, depends on you as a writer, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Anything that Stephen King touches is gold. So
yeah, I've been reading Gerald's Game.
Yeah,
so good. Yeah,
see, that's one of the ones that I keep seeing popped up a lot, but I don't actually know that much about it.
Okay, so the premise, it's quite a short one. It's only 400 pages. So it's,
oh, is that all? Okay.
Yeah, like compared to like Stephen King, but it's pretty tight.
I'm trying to read it at the minute, which is 1,400 pages.
Yeah, yeah. I booked my ticket as well today for It, the film.
Oh, I'm excited for that.
Okay, so Gerald's Game. So there's a film coming out for that soon. So the idea is that a woman and her husband are trying to spice up their sex life. So they go to this little lakeside cabin, and Gerald of the game ties her up with handcuffs to the bed. And then as they start to get into it, he has a heart attack and dies. So, and then she's literally stranded out there on the bed, handcuffed to the bed. There's no one there. Her dead husband's in the room.
Oh my god!
And then like weird stuff starts to happen as she sort of starts to starve, and like you're not too sure if stuff's in her head or if it's like real. That like yeah, and it gets quite dark. There's a dog. I don't want to spoil it if anyone does read it, but there's a dog.
Cujo.
It's not like a big dog. It's not like a scary dog, but it's the fact that she's tied down. She can't do anything. It's pretty grim. But,
oh my god!
Yeah,
that is a bit. He is very good at writing those kind of. Those parts where you really get into someone's head and you do get confused. Because the whole second act of Cujo is that. Have you read Cujo?
No.
So it's like a woman and a child
yeah.
locked in a car on like some farm out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's the same sort of thing.
Well, it's weird, isn't it? Like, so most books have like, they'll go, okay, so this person, they're going to go there and that's not going to work. And then they go somewhere else and then something else happens to them. So something else has to happen. Whereas these kind of Stephen King books, like there's like one location that nothing really happens, but you get so in their head, so into the minutiae, and it's so tense. Or like he's able to, he is a master. Like he is so good at like enveloping you and like keeping you hooked, and like not much happens, but it's fucking amazing.
Yeah. Oh man, I need to read that one then.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll read a Stephen King book, and then I'll be like, I need to read something a bit less intense.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I'll go back to another Stephen King book.
Yeah, yeah. I read It earlier this year, and that's probably one of my favorite books I've ever read. Now it's a masterclass in like horror, like it's an essay as well. Like it's everything that a horror novel should be, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Yeah. Okay, so I guess that's going to be my big whoop, Gerald's Game, I guess. It's really good. I was going to talk about my Huel, my powdered food replacement, but I'll leave that. Right.
No. Let's come back to that. Let's touch on that a little bit. You can't just dangle that in the water and then pull it out before anyone bites. Why are you eating space food?
Did you ever... Well, okay, so what do you eat for lunch at work, like normally?
I normally eat a sandwich because I'm really boring, actually. Every day it's a ham and cheese fucking sandwich.
Okay. I mean, that sounds pretty good. But so Huel is like it's like a little shake. You put the powder in, 3 scoops of this powder, and it's a complete meal substitute. So you get like 40 grams of protein. It's like eating like a big, really super healthy chicken salad thing, but it's like a vanilla milkshake sort of taste. Actually, it tastes more like Ready Brick. But and like some people have gone to the where they only have Huel now because it's got everything you need. Like you don't actually need to have actual food, although you probably want to.
Are you saying fuel or Huel?
Huel. So it's human fuel. That's the thing. But it does sound a little bit like someone vomiting up after
consuming.
Yeah.
Right. I'm googling this stuff. Where the hell did you get it from?
I think it's based in London. It's UK.
Huel.
Did you never see the Soylent thing? So Soylent was Which is a terrible name because there's a film called Soylent Green, which is where they melt people down and like turn them into this food that they give to people, and they're like they call it Soylent Green. Then a company came out called Soylent, and he said you're never gonna have to have anything else other than Soylent from now on. But it wasn't quite good in some ways. But Huel is meant to be it's completely vegan as well. Not that you know, I'm that way inclined, but.
So how are you feeling after this Huel? How long have you been taking it for?
Pretty good in the I've only like a week, just for lunch as well. So I just have it because I just eat shit at lunch, most of the time anyway, like a pasty or you know Greggs or something. No, that's not good. You don't want to be having that every day.
No, but okay. So did you buy your Huel online?
Yeah, you get it's like £45.
£45 a bag.
It works out about £2 a meal though.
Okay.
So it kind of works. Yeah, it kind of works out quite well, especially when you think about like how much goodness you're getting in there. Do you know what I mean? Like how rare it is that you have I get all my nutrients, veggies, and all that kind of stuff sorted, and it's in a tasty ready brick milkshake.
The Story Studio podcast brought to you by Huel, the human nutrition source.
If you're interested, I'll get you a link, and it gets me £5 off my next order.
Nice. Okay, I might actually look into some of that then, because I find that I do just eat the same crap, and I'm not sure if I'm getting the right nutrients.
Yeah. Oh, so I won't go into too much longer. I would say I've been finding when I wake up in the morning, I've been feeling a lot less groggy, so I've been like just awake, and whether it's because of this, I have no idea, but maybe.
Maybe it's placebo.
Cut to 2 days later, RIP Luke. No, you have to put like a Facebook post there. Died from bad Huel. That's a Stephen King story.
Yeah.
Bad Huel. Okay, so today we're going to be talking to, in fact, Dan won't be there, but in the interview section of the show, it's just going to be me. Dan was working hard doing his thing. What were you doing? What were you doing again? I can't remember.
I was working.
Actual like proper work.
Oh, yeah, I was working outside of hours at work to get stuff done. I'm just a workhorse.
Yeah. I got to sit down with a Mr. Harry Sheriff. He's a filmmaker from Manchester. I'll do a proper introduction in a second. But like I was captivated really when I saw that he'd gone from making like struggling to try and get stuff made and deciding I'm just gonna make my own short films, and then he sort of worked his way up to getting a feature film development like deal, and it's all just off the back of his own elbow grease. Just mix the metaphors wherever, it doesn't matter. But like he's a really, really cool guy. So that's the next part of the show. Anything else to tell him, Dan, before you head off to work?
I just want to say I love everyone. And you know, if you want to share the love and get in touch with us, just # The Story Studio. And just say, we love you too, Dan. We love you too, Luke. And just, let's just spread a little bit of love.
Huel.
Huel.
That's all I can say now. Huel. So today we're joined by a young whippersnapper, writer and film director based in Manchester. In 2016, he made 12 short films in 12 months, which screened short film nights all around the Northwest. He made a short with Eye Shorts. It's called Hits Like a Girl. And Eye Shorts is basically like this like English funding sort of thing. It's super difficult to get, so the fact that he got it means it's really, really excellent. And it's currently in post-production, I believe, with a 6-part web series, early days, and has some very exciting feature film news. So how's it going, Mr. Harry Sheriff? How's it going, man?
Yeah, it's going great. We're just finishing touches on the web series, and hopefully that'll be up in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah. So, I mean... So this can be like a little bit of a different show because we tend to talk about like writing and publishing and that kind of thing. But like, I don't know where I saw your work first. I think maybe someone tweeted like your 12 short films project, and it just sort of resonated with like, I don't know, my like philosophy of just getting stuck in and sort of getting stuff made and not waiting for funding schemes and that kind of thing. So yeah, it's probably a cool thing to get you on to shoot the shit. So I mean, just to jump in, what are you currently geeking out on? What are you watching, reading? What's exciting you at the minute?
Well, I finished Master of None season 2, and I was in awe of that.
I've only seen the first couple of episodes, and I was, you know, you want to savor something. because it's so good. I was pretty much like that.
Yeah. It's just so good. I mean, it's beautiful and it's just so well written. And the fact the first episode of the second season is like black and white,
yeah,
and in Italy, and just, I think it's just really clever. And Aziz Ansari is just brilliant.
Yeah. There's that, I think I was in the first season, I was like, this is great. Every episode I was thinking, this is really great. And then I think it was the last episode and they did like a weird little thing. It was the bell jar is a quote from that Sylvia Plath about the fig tree, and like all of the screen kept splitting into different variations of what could happen in his life. And I was like, this has just taken that like next level. It was so like beautiful and touching.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's generous as well. Like, cause when you think of, I mean, I'm not going to spoil anything cause you've not watched the second season, but there's so many episodes, like almost half the season, that aren't about him.
Yeah,
sort of about other people, and I think because he is the lead guy, it just shows that he doesn't have the ego, and he's like, you know what, this show, I'm not going to just do the first season with me again. I'm going to really expand it and improve it, and yeah. So I was impressed with that.
I think it's weird. Like most, I don't know. It doesn't feel like he's trying to prove anything. It just really just feels like he's just having fun and sort of experimenting and doing whatever the hell he wants to do. It's a really interesting show. So, I mean, do you want to give our listeners like a little bit of a flavor of like who you are, what you do, where you come from and that kind of thing?
Yeah. So I'm from my hometown is Southport, which is about 45 minutes away from Liverpool. And I knew pretty early on that I wanted to be a film director. Sort of, I was sports obsessed growing up, and then that didn't pan out. I wasn't good enough to be a footballer. So I thought, right, I'm going to pursue filmmaking. So I went to university at UCLan and did a film production and screenwriting degree, which was awesome. I actually took a year out before it because I knew what course I wanted to do, but there wasn't a course near me that did it. Yeah. It wasn't very popular back then. So this was like 2007 time. So like media courses weren't what they are now. And UCLan had just built a building that was like £12 million called the Media Factory. So I went to an open day there and was really impressed with it. Obviously full of IMAX and they had a green screen and it was like really cool. So went there, had a good time there. Short films were terrible, but still loved it, and just persisted, carried on. And then after graduating there, I went and did a two-year course at Everyman Theatre, which was sort of really intense, basically an MA, but it wasn't. It wasn't a qualified MA. It was just a young writers program.
Yeah.
Something that's very well regarded down south, but for some reason up north, it's really not considered anything special. So, for example, the Royal Court Young Writers Program, the writers that get onto that sort of get agents.
Is this playwriting?
Playwriting.
Okay, cool.
So, like writers like Jack Thorne,
who's
just an absolute beast. He was on the Royal Court Young Writers Program. It's very competitive to get on there. But yeah, it's like I say, it's up north. It's not, people don't really even know what it is. But it is quite prestigious. So we had to sort of read like 8 plays a week.
And are you a theatre fan? Okay, cool. So theatre is something that I've always sort of wanted to, I mean, I think I've only seen, what was the Wizard of Oz one? The Witch one and Book of Mormon. I've only seen those.
Right, yeah.
But like, I really want to get into actually, like, you know, actual theatre. But I mean, is that something that you went to as a kid? Like, how did you get into theatre?
That just came down through dialogue. Like, I was writing dialogue on the screenwriting program, and then the tutor, Bill McCoy, who's still a big supporter of mine, and he's head of screenwriting there. He said, you know, you should think of doing a play, because I think he'd won an award in Manchester at a Fringe festival. And he said, you know, you should pursue it. So that's when I Googled it and found this young writers program. And then I started reading sort of just playwrights that had crossed over to screenwriting. So like David Mamet and Martin McDonagh. And then Harold Pinter, I was like massive on when I sort of first read him. And then, so I had this intense program of playwriting. And then after that, that's when the filmmaking kicked in more.
And so just to jump back a sec, so when you say you said you want to be a filmmaker pretty early on, personally, I don't think I even knew what, I knew what films were. I didn't know there was a people behind it for a long time. Like, what was the thing that made you think that's what I want to do?
Well, I watched The Godfather, and that was, although it's a cliche, that was like a big, like, wow. That was a big wow moment. And it's really weird because now in hindsight, when I analyse that film and like Francis Ford Coppola, that he sort of started from a theatre background because he did theatre a lot. And then obviously it's got a literary quality to it because it's adapted from a book.
Yeah.
And it's just top to bottom, it's just like an amazing film.
Yeah.
And then when I'd got into film, because I never went to the cinema as a kid, because you have some filmmakers who were just, you know, from the age of six, they're like, I want to make films. And they go to cinema religiously. Because I was sports obsessed, I wasn't really doing that. So I haven't got a lot of memories of going to the cinema.
No.
But then I just wanted to just consume film and just watched film after film. And I think like the age of 16 was just massive because I remember watching so many films that just like end up being my favorite films. So like Taxi Driver, or you know, just like a lot of French New Wave as well. Like probably yeah. Watched Truffaut, well, a lot of Truffaut. So when I watched 400 Blows, I was like, wow, this is so real. This is amazing. And so, yeah, that had a big impact at an early age.
Cool. I mean, so you're in sports, so you do the theatre thing, and did that sort of make you a better writer? I mean, I know it obviously did, but I mean, what way would like a playwriting course sort of feed into your like film writing or filmmaking in general? Did you direct any plays?
Yeah, well, the course was you had to write a play over the course of the program. So I did that and it got a reading. So that was really interesting because you have 80 pages and then you see actors, you know, perform it. And so that's eye-opening. But I wrote a comedy. And so to hear people, it was the first time where people were like laughing at my writing in a good way.
Yeah.
and I was like, all right, well, this is okay. I can do that. That's good. But then it would, you know, you do writing exercises and stuff, and sometimes things would get ripped apart and you'd be like, right, okay, so I've got a long way to go sort of thing. But I guess when you're reading eight plays a week, you're just getting a sense of structure and, you know,
that
different
osmosis,
aspects.
But you're just sort of absorbing it in. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And just your tastes as well, you know, because there was some stuff that there's some theatre that I absolutely despise, and I don't actually go to the theatre a lot because I end up being disappointed most of the time and just not enjoying it. But for example, Martin McDonagh.
The Pillow Man, right? Is that the...
Yeah, The Pillow Man is amazing. That, yeah. But he had a play called The Hangman on, I think it was last year or the year before.
Yeah.
And I like made the trip to London because I knew it wasn't going to play up north. And I just loved it and thought it was brilliant. And just because he's just really entertaining and his dialogue's amazing. And
he did In Bruges, right? I'm
thinking yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So In Bruges and Seven Psychopaths, like, I think are two amazing films. Like for the dialogue, especially like In Bruges, I think it's maybe one of my top 10 films ever. I think actually when I can think of like just everything about it is so on point and so funny and so melancholic. And it's just amazing.
Yeah. I mean, he's just ridiculous because he, like, obviously he was a produced playwright when he was very young, and then he did this short film that actually won him an Oscar. So he got the best Oscar for short film.
Yeah.
And then I'm pretty sure In Bruges got nominated for best screenplay and won a load of awards. And just like, so he's just so consistently, I mean, and I bumped into him. The weird thing was when I went down to watch the play, I went down for my birthday with my girlfriend, and I didn't, for some reason I wasn't getting emails, and so we got in the tube to the Royal Court, and just as we stepped into the foyer, this email came through, and it was like, oh, we're really sorry, tonight's performance is cancelled, and I was like so devastated. I was like, oh my god, it's my birthday, come down and see my favorite writer's play. And the person at the box office was like, oh, we might be able to get you a ticket for tomorrow. And we were going to be there tomorrow, so it was okay. So I sort of walk out of the Royal Court devastated. And across the way, I see a guy taking a photograph of the hangman. It's like up in lights. And I go, oh, that's really weird. He looks exactly like Martin McDonagh. And it was him. So like I ran across the street dodging traffic to meet him.
Yeah.
And just had a nice chat with him. And was just like, he was very apologetic. He was like, the play's not ready yet.
Wasn't finished? Or?
Well, they were saying it was definitely finished. They said it was to do with the health and safety thing of, basically someone gets hanged in the first scene. And so it was to do with the health and safety of that.
Comedy, is it?
It is. It's a dark comedy. But he was very nice. And I think he was a bit surprised that I knew who he was. But then again, he was outside the building of where his play was going to be.
You're like the 17th person who came up to him that night.
yeah, exactly. But I thought it was nice that he was taking a photo of his own.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I thought that was quite like, he's human. You know, he's just taking a photo of his as a memory.
Yeah. So, you do the third thing, the play, right? You level up in like terms of dialogue and that kind of thing. So when do you come back to filmmaking from that point?
Well, after I graduated from the Young Writers Program, we put on sort of scratch nights, short plays, and we all sort of produced it and organized it. And it was really hard work. And we ended up putting on about 5 nights, I think, in 1 year. Which was pretty good going, really, considering we all had to write the short play and cast it and put it on and advertise it. And then I just remember thinking after sort of the fourth one, like 30 people are coming to watch this.
Yeah.
And then it's dying. It's going nowhere.
Yeah.
I really need to get back into filmmaking because then it's there and it's there forever and I can show people what I can do. But in between sort of taking action on that, and getting the Creative England funding, one of the short plays was sort of well received. So that I ended up quickly writing a full length play of that and putting that on for 2 nights at a theatre in Liverpool, which was an interesting experience because it was
like an 80 page.
Yeah, it was a wow. it was about an hour and 10 minutes, an hour and 20 minutes comedy again of sort of 2 struggling actors living in a flat in Toxteth, and sort of one of them having really bad mental health issues. And it was good. I thought it was good. I thought it was funny. It was, and again, I would never have done it if it wasn't for sort of testing it out.
Yeah.
And people going, oh, where's this going to go? It's really funny. And then the actor and the actress that were in it were like, can you please, you know, we really enjoyed doing this. Can you please write more of it? And then it sort of, you know, basically one of the actors sort of willed it into being and sort of did a lot of the organizational stuff that I just wasn't capable of doing.
Yeah. And is that, so what's happening with that play now? You sort of put it in the, the armory ready for maybe like, you know, feature film?
No, it was, to be honest, it wasn't all a good experience. It was, it wasn't all a good experience because I didn't really direct the play. Well, I sort of did, but I was never sort of credited as a director. And it just turned a bit sour, really. Like the relationship between one of the actors, it sort of that they were sort of using it as a like a jumping off point, and sort of did a lot of radio. So they did a lot of radio press, sort of saying they'd produced it, and my name wasn't mentioned. And then they wanted to do it again. And I was like, well, it's down to me and I don't want to do it again. And so it was just sort of a weird
80 pages of writing is a massive, like it's a tall order in itself. Like, and to sort of not really get the, if you're directing that as well and to not get the credit, that's gotta be, a little sour.
Yeah, but it was eye opening and it was like, right. Okay. Again, it was like, it came down to a bit more of like, of control, and I should have more control around things, and not in like a maniacal way of just like everything's got to be my way, but just when you enter into a project, just knowing how like you can't be screwed over or you can't be taken advantage of.
Yeah.
And like the play was good, and it went on for 2 nights, and then it was like that was it. People had a good laugh with it, and it, but it's not something, and it was sort of written specifically for those actors. So I worked in a way where it was sort of, we had these 10 pages and I basically threw them out because it, that was its own thing, and started from scratch again. But it was sort of written bit by bit by bit. So it was just, for them. Like, so if I ever got like two other actors in to play it, it would feel really strange, I imagine, because I would just be seeing, it wouldn't really be characters. I'd be seeing them, two actors again.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean. So I do want to write a play at some point. Cause I've written a couple. I wrote that one. I wrote the one for the program. And then I've written another one since, but I've not really been happy enough with any of them to send them off anywhere or get notes on them.
Yeah.
So it's on the back burner.
It's something I'd love to do at some point in the future, but I just don't know enough about it to even, you know, even try. But I mean, maybe you should take me to a play or two. And
well, I think if you're gonna start, there's no better thing than finding two actors that you really like and going, all right, I'm going to write a scene for them, and we can just, you know, do it in the living room or whatever, and just hear how it sounds.
Is that sort of idea I kind of get from your short film projects as well, like the 12 short films? Like, there's a few that are like scenes, you know what I mean? That, like, there was one, Death of an Actor, I'm actually thinking of right now. It's like you sort of directing someone, and that seems like a very quick from, it's very, like, really funny, really great. I advise people to go watch it, but it's like, it seems like a short time from, oh, I've got an idea for something, let's you know, quickly do it here in this room.
Is
that how that worked?
Not really. I guess, I mean, all of the 12 shorts were like a quick turnaround.
Yeah.
But well, with that one...
Before we go to that, so do you want to tell us a bit about, like, how you came up with the idea to do the 12 short films and what that project is and where that came from? And then we'll go in a bit more detail about them in particular.
Yeah. Well, I guess I'd the previous year I'd not done anything. Well, I was doing a master's, so the first year was an MA in creative writing at the Manchester Writing School. And so I was a frustrated filmmaker. So I was writing prose and I was reading a lot of short stories because my project was going to be a short story collection.
Yeah.
And then it got to sort of December of 2015. And I was like, oh my God, I've not made a single short film. It had been like over a year since I'd made the Creative England short film. And so I just thought, you know what, I'm going to shoot something on my phone. So I did that and I enjoyed it and people found it was funny, even though it looked like it was shot on a potato. It looked terrible.
Yeah.
But then I was like, that's how easy it is. You know, it really is that easy because filmmaking is that weird thing where, like, it, on one hand, it is so easy.
Yeah.
You know, all you need to do is press play. But then on the other hand, it's so difficult. If you make it difficult, you know, depending on what type of film you want to make and, you know, if there needs to be a budget and whatever, like, it can be really difficult, but really it's not. So then I sat down with my sound man, Ryan, and I was like, what cheap sound equipment can I get? And so that's when he was like, well, I can give you a day, like, just give me a day and, you know, I'll get it booked off or whatever. And then he said, I think, you know, I can always do weekends. And then it just came into my head of like, well, maybe we do something one a month. Why don't we do 12 and 12? And up until that point, I didn't know that. I believe Shane Meadows has done it, and I think Alice Lowe had done something similar as well. But at that point, I didn't know anyone who had done it. I just thought, okay, well, that's it. And I had the first two. And I thought, well, I've got 2 months to come up with, you know, a couple more.
Yeah.
So I should be all right. But then since doing it, there's been a guy on Twitter that has done it as well, he must be up to his 9th one now, or his 8th one, and he said it's because of me he started doing it, which is,
it's just a solid idea. I mean, so photographers on Flickr used to do Project 365s, which were like a photo a day. It's similar. I think it's that kind of deciding you're going to hold yourself accountable in a way, and you can't get halfway through and then decide,
Nah,
too much work. Although, did that happen? Did you ever feel like, I think I've bitten off more than I can chew?
It did, yeah, it did. I think, you know what, it got to the point where there was a couple of times, like, you know, I've never ran a marathon, but you know they say you hit the wall in a marathon.
Yeah.
It was like that. So I got sort of halfway through and was like, oh, what's the, like, why am I even doing this? Like, what's the point? Because at that point I'd done like 6 or 7 and I was like, I don't even need to do 12. Like, what's the point in doing 12? It's just, you know, and then I would think, well, no, you have to do 12 because that's the whole sort of, I had one eye on the whole marketing thing of,
yeah,
you know, putting it on the CV as in like, oh, I did. And also I knew I wanted to email people and introduce myself and be like, oh, last year I did 12 shorts in 12 months.
Yeah.
And I was like, I won't be able to say that, you know, and it, so, and
I made 7 films.
Yeah, I made 7
pretty
films.
Pretty good, right? Yeah.
But, and that's proven to be true as well. When I do email people, it's pretty good, you know, it's a good thing to introduce yourself with. But then also I got to like October and I'd done a Halloween horror thing. And then I had 2 left and it was like, it was getting to the very, like down to the wire of like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to do this because I'm just bone dry. And somehow like we did it. I think we ended up shooting 2 over 1 weekend.
Yeah.
And sort of making it happen. But yeah, it wasn't pretty the end of it.
It's interesting. Like there's Parkinson's law, which states that the work will get done in the time available. And it always seems to be like if I always have to try and think about it in terms of writing, but like if I have 8 hours in a day to write so many words, it'll take me that long to do that many words. If I have like an hour, it'll take me, I'll get the words done in that hour. Like it's, if you sort of set yourself these weird little deadlines, you do it eventually. Like you will get it done.
I think that's, again, that was another reason for the 12, because you don't, that it had to be done, and it's that focus and that discipline. I think most filmmakers go wrong because they don't have any of that, and they just have, like, most filmmakers sort of have funding as their big issue.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, right, well, I haven't been able to get funding. And then they'll just sit on something for a while and they'll just wait for a funding opportunity, you know, and then it's just, but they come about like every couple of weeks or months, you know, and you're just constantly waiting.
I completely agree. It's that whole thing of they've got an idea for a film, they've got a script, and like they've got like a picture collage and they've got like a mood reel, and they've got all the bits, but they've not actually done any work in terms of making it themselves or getting off the ground, or maybe putting it off and doing something else. But like, I kind of feel like all of that really is just an element of fear. Like, I feel like what they really want, when they want like a funding scheme to give them money, they really want someone to tell them that their idea is good. You know what I mean? Like, it's good enough. We approve. Your idea is approved. Whereas like, I don't think it works like that. I think nowadays, especially, you do kind of have to just put content out there. Like, you really just have to put content out over and over again. And like your thing of doing the 12 short films in 12 months is... it's like a blog post headline. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's so like catchy. Like, I made 12 short films in 12 months, and it's such a catchy idea.
Well, another thing was like taking influence from vloggers.
Yeah.
Because I was looking at them and I was going, how are they? Because as a fiction filmmaker, you look at their efficiency and their output and you're just going, well, how can I change it so I'm like them, or I'm a little bit closer to them, you know? Because like what Casey Neistat's done in terms of like one a day.
That's about 3 or 4 years, and he did it for a long time.
Yeah, he's done loads, and he's not the only one either. And there was a guy called, his surname escapes me, but Julian something, and he was doing one. He was a fiction filmmaker, and he was doing one a week. So it was like a new short film every Wednesday.
Cool.
And he since stopped doing it, but he got like, you know, 1 million subscribers, and there were these really cool. I mean, the comedy was sort of a bit weird for me and a bit too surreal.
Yeah.
But he was clearly experienced and had lighting, and he must have had like a cool.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments.
Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Through that were talented and stuff, because his stuff looked great, and I think he was shooting on a Black Magic. And so I was watching his stuff, and I was like, right, okay, well, it's not going to look as good as his stuff, but I've got to get closer to this, you know, output thing. And I'm still thinking that. I think about that every day. Like, obviously I want to do bigger projects and I want to do features, but there's that thing of how, you know, in 2017 it is possible to get stuff out sort of on a regular basis. And so, and how do you do that, you know?
So we're in a completely different world now. And also in terms of like craft, like, do you feel like if you spent a year working on 1 5-minute short film versus what you did, so a short film every month, do you feel like which would have improved your craft the most? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think when you're working on one project, obviously you have that time to sort of get everything perfect, but a lot of the time it leads to sort of overthinking anyway. I think the nice thing about the 12 shorts was that I didn't have any time to overthink and dwell on stuff that I didn't really need to dwell on. And I was a bit sort of, I was very clinical. I was very like, if, you know, I guess with making decisions, I was just like, nah, we're doing it this way. Like, because it has to get done. And I remember on the first one, the cinematographer wasn't over the moon with the bathroom, because we were shooting in my bathroom.
Yeah.
And it's not very cinematic. You know, there's no window for light coming in and what have you. But I was like, it's my bathroom. I'm going to have to get naked to get in this bath. I'm not going to feel comfortable if we go and use someone else's bathroom.
Yeah.
Let's just do it here. It's the first one. Let's get it out of the way, sort of thing. Because anyone else, they could have sort of gone, oh yeah, let's try and get another bathroom. And then you didn't. And then you end up like giving up and going, oh, I don't want to do it in my own bathroom now. Like, and I was just sort of, I was so sort of obsessed and one track minded. I was like, no. So there's that.
Yeah. So, I mean, so do you think the project 12, have you got a name for it, by the way? Like a shorthand name for it?
No, I just call it, 12 in 12, the 12 shorts.
12 in 12. Okay. I like it. And did it make you a better filmmaker?
Yeah. 100%. I mean, it's the best thing I've done, like best decision to do that. I mean, I've had so much positive feedback and so many good things have come out of it. You know, and that'll continue, you know, for the next couple of years. I'll still be getting stuff from that, and it's just and that wasn't the intention. It wasn't like, oh, I'll make 12 shorts and then I'll be able to get a feature and then, you know,
I will be rich and famous by the end.
It was just like, I was so annoyed with myself that I had this ability and I wasn't using it. And and just again, like, just being able to make a short film on a phone when I'm shooting it and I'm not technical at all, and to be able to get a reaction off people, it was just like, I need to do that more often.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's Ray Bradbury is one of my like favorite science fiction writers, and one of his big biggest piece of advice to people is write a short story every single week for a year, and you'll end up with like 52 short stories. They won't all be good, but you'll be a better writer, and there'll definitely be some pretty great stories in there. And it's just getting into that habit of like just producing constantly and getting them in front of an audience and sort of testing ideas and not being too precious. Yeah. I think if you know, if you're spending a year working on this one short film, the pressure to have it be fucking amazing is like just weighing down on you, and you'll be so scared to sort of get out there. If you're thinking, this one might not be as good, but the next one be good, or like the one after that would be good, or
yeah.
I know you try and get every single one amazing, but like it takes the pressure off a bit, I guess.
Yeah. I'm also very cynical of sort of the routes that people take as well. So like if you do the one brilliant short film, where's that going to lead to? Like what's the best that can, because I think most filmmakers, again, they think like you should go a certain way, and you do, you know, you make the amazing short film and it goes to the festivals, and then, you know, it wins loads of awards. And then, I just think, it doesn't really happen very often, and even then you need something after that. You need a feature script, basically.
Yeah. David Sandberg, he's the horror director who did Annabelle Creation and Lights Out. He was making these little short films with no money, with just him and his girlfriend or fiance or whatever, and one of them was the Lights Out short film. And that went incredibly viral, and then that suddenly was the one that sort of got him those meetings, and he had like, you know, and scripts and ideas and stuff already. But I think we're not in the world anymore where, I mean, sure, some short films might go and win awards at film festivals, but there's so many very expensive shit short films. Like didn't need to waste that much money on that short film. It would have been better to spread that money against like five or six short films.
Yeah, 100%. Definitely. I mean, the thing is, I'm not saying I have the right answer or my path is the right way, because if you're sitting on a brilliant short film that's going to get into 30 film festivals, and you also have that feature length screenplay, then that's an amazing, then definitely, yeah, go to the film festivals, because you just need that one person to watch it, and you know you'll be grand. And if not, you can always email people the feature length screenplay or the log line saying I've made a short film and it's just gone to 30 festivals, and so that's a great marketing line, you know. And so I think with David Sandberg, he got lucky in the sense that he just put it online for a competition, and then it went viral, and you know, next thing you know, he's in Hollywood a couple of weeks later or what have you.
It is a great short film, but have you seen the other short films he did as part of that little like experiment? They're okay with it. Nowhere near as good. I think he just managed to hit on that one solid idea with like the light switch, which is really effective. But you just need that one thing to sort of take off.
Yeah. I mean, and the thing as well, like the 12 shorts are not they're not amazing short films. They were more like exercises and me pushing ideas. You know, so for example, like I knew I was going to make one at certain locations. You know, so I knew I was going to make one at a phone box. I knew I was going to make one at a bus stop. And so, like, when people have seen them and sort of industry people have taken interest, it's more with me and the idea and the sort of the creativity. They've not been in awe of the beautiful short film or whatever. Like you say, you see some short films that come out of film schools and they're like, they get like a 20 grand budget and they look incredible. But then they're sort of lacking in creativity. You know what I mean? So I feel like with 20 grand, anyone can make a beautiful looking film of 20 grand.
Well, this is the thing that, so I used to, I got really into photography for a while, and, you know, I got a DSLR and I was taking these photos. And once you kind of get to a point where you realize a lot of these people who are taking these amazing photographs just have a great fucking camera and a great lens. that's 90% of the thing. And then the rest is obviously the creativity and sort of taking a good picture. But it kind of made me realize that like, that's not interesting. Like, I want to sort of find other ways to be creative that you don't just need the camera to sort of, or the money or the equipment to get you there, really. But yeah, do you have a favourite film out of the 12?
Well, sometimes it changes, but I do like the last one. I like the last one because I felt like I was hitting upon something that was not really a short film. It felt like it was the opening scene to something. It felt like it was from a feature film or, you know, at least a TV show.
Yeah.
So
what was the name of this one?
So that one's Harry and Jim Get Coffee.
So that's the one when I watched that, I thought that it was an opening scene or like to the web series or something. It felt like a Mumblecore, like Francis Ha, sort of that sort of vibe, like really well done, really funny, really sort of sweet and lo-fi. And in Manchester, you made it look really pretty, which I think I told you before.
Yeah. No, it's nice. I think, again, like it could have been with the short films, it was sort of halfway through, or not even halfway through when we first started. I was like, is the objective here to get as many views as possible? And I was always sort of annoyed at, you know, these memes on Facebook that were getting like millions of views, and then our shorts were getting like 4,000 views. But then I realized it was because we weren't going after that sort of that premise.
You know,
and like, for example, Kieran Griffiths was in one of our short films, and he's quite well known in Manchester because he was in Shameless. And the week after he was in one of our shorts, he was in a short for, I think it was Unilad, that got like 10 million views. Because it was, I think the film, the headline was like, when your girlfriend discovers the Snapchat filters.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh God, you know, and it got like 10 million views, which is obviously great for him and stuff. But I was like, there was something dirty about that. And it was sort of, it was a bit annoying as a filmmaker to be like, oh, well, my stuff's getting a couple of thousand views. But then I sort of learned to get over that and just focus on improving as a filmmaker and just trying to make a better short film each time out.
Exactly. And you, as like you said, it wasn't the purpose, right? To have like something go viral or make £1 million or whatever. It's like to get better at the craft of it.
Yeah. I think as well, like I think that why the last one is my favorite is because I knew when I was making it that I knew what my next thing was, or I knew, because I often, like, when I finish something and I have that sort of time in between where I'm like, oh, I don't know what I'm going to do next or whatever, I sort of go back and I watch the last thing. And then that sometimes tells me where I need to go.
Yeah.
For some reason, because I'll think like, oh, this is what I was thinking, because with Get Coffee, me and Jim were obviously thinking of sort of very realistic acting and how we can make it feel like it's a comedy, but it's not really a sitcom. Because we always sort of slag off British comedy and how no one's really gone past The Office. They just seem to be influenced by The Office now. It's just, you know, mockumentary style.
And that was ages ago. That was a long time ago.
So, and then I knew after we did that, I was like, yeah, that was really cool. We should just do that. Keep doing that and keep working on it. And then that's how the web series came about.
So you do the playwriting course, and then you have like a period of time where you're like, oh man, I just want to make a short film. It's been so long. You're spinning your wheels, and you think this is where most filmmakers are right now. They're spinning the wheels, and they're thinking, I just so like frustrated because nothing's actually getting made. I'm not getting any further. So you decide to make 12 short films in a year. You do that, and then this web series comes along. So I mean, and this actually got funding, right? So.
Is this
from the project?
Well, yeah, I guess it was in a way, because I was on something called the Northwest Talent Program, which anyone sort of in the Northwest could have applied for, and it was held at FACT in Liverpool, and it was like monthly meetups, and you had to apply to get on it, and then I think 30 or 40 people went, and just each month they had like just practitioners, you know, that had made different features or TV, or like one month we had Brian Smith, who produced Mad Max. So he was talking about how he basically went over to Sydney and sort of Damage Control basically helped Fury Road get made. which was really fascinating. And then at the end of that, there was a pitching sort of competition. It wasn't for a great amount of money. It was for £1,500, but I was going to make the web series anyway. But then I had it in my head of sort of, I mean, as soon as it was announced, I know like people are critical of like the law of attraction or whatever, but as soon as it was announced, I was like, yeah, I'm going to get that. Like I've got it in my moleskin, like, cause I keep these red moleskins and I've got sort of OCD with them. I've written in them for about 7 or 8 years now.
Yeah.
But I dated it. I was like, well, £1,500, that's already in the budget. And that was like a couple of months before I'd actually pitched for it.
Yeah, that's weird. I feel like the law of attraction really isn't like anything magical. I kind of feel like you put your intention down and it's that constant reminder to make those small decisions each and every day to work towards it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I don't know.
Or it's magical.
Well, I think like to compare a really stupid analogy, like just from the sports background, like you hear footballers who score amazing goals, that in post-match interviews, they're like, yeah, I just knew as soon as it left my foot. And you're like, really? Did you? Like, how could you know as soon as it left your foot? Because it only just left your foot.
Yeah.
But like, I understand, I sort of get that and I understand. And I think because, I mean, like the people in the room that were pitching, they were really good. Like, because they'd all had, a relationship with Creative England, or they'd made a good short film and they'd gone to festivals and what have you. So they weren't like just Joe Average off the street. But I think because I'd done the 12 shorts and I knew my idea was, I'm going to use this money and I'm going to make 6 episodes of something. And I think that's very exciting because where the industry is going in terms of web series. I just knew I had a nice little package there, whereas everyone else was sort of, I mean, some, for example, one person got up and they wanted £1,500 for basically essentially petrol for transport because they were developing a treatment with a screenwriter in London.
Yeah.
And I just, yeah, when he pitched, I was like, well, £1,500 development money to do that. Like, so yeah, I guess, you know, it wasn't an arrogance. It was just like, I know that no one will have an idea like that in terms of I'm going to make it, you know.
Yeah.
So because the thing is, again, quite a lot of people were getting up asking for money for a short film.
Yeah.
So they would pitch the short film. And then in my pitch, which was one of the last ones, I was like, you know, I'm not using this for one short film. I'm using it to develop a series. And then because I not only did I have the 12 shorts, but I had Get Coffee, which was essentially a pilot of the whole thing.
Yeah.
They were like, ah, right, he's going to do this. And, you know, so, and I think it helped as well. Like on the panel, there were people that sort of knew me. There was, you know, on the panel, there was a lady from Creative England who she'd helped us a lot in terms of script editing Hits Like a Girl. And, I mean, there was people on the panel that I didn't know at all. You know, it wasn't total like favoritism or anything, but there was just a couple of people there who, for example, there was a filmmaker called Nick Moss who he made a short film with his name escapes me now. John Hurt. Oh my God, that's terrible. That's blasphemy. Sorry.
Rest in peace.
He made like the sort of one of the last films with John Hurt. And he'd selected a short film of mine the year before to play at FACT at Liverpool Film Night. So he knew of me through that short film. But again, we weren't drinking buddies.
Yeah.
But again, I think that's another thing for filmmakers. It's like, if you can keep chipping away.
You build relationships over time as well.
Yeah.
They're not like best friends, but like just to sort of, I feel like, there's like an awareness, and once they know of you, they sort of have more confidence in you, especially if you've been doing, if they know you've been chipping away for the last 2 years or something.
Yeah, no, exactly. Because I mean, the amount of people that, you know, not just on this pitching competition, but I think people pitch for, you know, 10 grand and they've not made a short film. You know, it happens all the time. I did a talk recently at FACT where I was like, the subject of the talk was, it's not about the funding.
Yeah.
And then when I sat down, all the questions were about funding. All the questions were like, oh, so how did you get the Creative England funding? And it was like, it's not about that. Like,
give us the magic answer. That's what they want. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly what they want. They want the shortcut.
Yeah.
So sadly, there isn't one.
Unfortunately not. No. So the web series is called Early Days.
Yeah, it took us forever to come up with a title. We had a lot of bad ones. But yeah, I think Early Days fits it pretty well.
Okay. And you're putting it all online in one go? Or are you going to sort of...
No, we're going to do one a week. I think because we're not Netflix and it's Facebook and it's Vimeo and whatever, I think if you put up all six, it would sort of get lost a little bit.
Yeah.
And people would maybe watch them out of order, which isn't crucial. But I think as well, like for one a week, it's a nice sort of a nice way of doing it.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, and when is this gonna premiere?
Well, I still got a little bit of editing to do, and then I'm handing it over to the sound designer. So I'm hoping the middle of September.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, fingers crossed. I'm looking forward for people to see it because it's come from just a pitch and £1,500, and then me and Jim have just sort of written it as we've gone along. I think that's the thing as well. Like, I beat myself up quite a lot over it when we were shooting it, because in my head, for some stupid reason, I had the £10,000 version of it. You know, like if we had 10 grand per episode.
Yeah.
And I was thinking of like these brilliant storylines that obviously weren't in the web series, like if we'd have had the time to spend on it and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And so when I was watching back, you know, all six, and was like, this, we got all of this in the can for 1500. It was hard to then, you know, take a look at it and go, oh, it's not that thing that it can be.
Yeah. I mean, how long is the entire thing now?
I think most of the episodes are 5 minutes. I think the last two are like 8 minutes each.
And there's six episodes. Right.
Yeah, the six episodes. Okay. Yeah. And they're all a little bit different in terms of sort of format as well. Like, because one of them is just sort of one scene, which is, I guess, is quite similar to the 12 shorts.
Mm.
But then most of the others are sort of jump around. But it's been an amazing experience. I mean, before the web series, I was kicking myself going, oh, why didn't I just do another 12? Because there was part of me that wanted to just do that again. But then just market it in a better way, or shoot better behind the scenes stuff and release them as well. But then for whatever reason, I didn't do that because I wanted to try something new. I'm excited to see how this comes out and what people think of it.
Yeah, definitely. Me too. And we'll share it out on our social media bits and pieces, and maybe drop something out on the mailing list and that kind of thing. But I mean, we probably haven't got too much time to talk about it, and I don't know how much you can talk about it, but the feature film as well. So I mean, there's so many people out there, filmmakers out there, who just don't know what to do, and I just want to use you as an example here. So you did the short films, and then you did got that sort of, in a way, led to the web series, and then this has all sort of led to a feature film sort of deal, right? I mean, can you talk about that at the minute?
Yeah. Well, essentially, I met Red Union Films at the pitch. Mm. So when I pitched the web series, that's where I met David Hughes from Red Union. And he said, you know, sort of, I kept mentioning, I spoke a lot about business stuff in the pitch. So about web series being bought, and that's where I see things going. And then I talked a lot about improv, because we'd obviously shot this last short film with a lot of improvisation. And his ears sort of pricked up at that, because he'd just done a feature film with improvisation, and he wanted to do it sort of from the beginning. Because I think he came in at the end of a process where he gave some money for a film to finish sort of post-production.
Yeah.
And he wanted to produce one himself. So I think it was good timing, because Red Union haven't done a sort of a straight-up comedy. And so he said, you know, send me the short films. And then over about a period of a month, there was a nice sort of backwards and forwards where he watched the short films, and then he'd come back and he'd say, can you send us the scripts? because we want to see what your writing's like. And then we had an interesting sort of talk because some of the scripts, like for example, the Get Coffee one, there wasn't a script. But then for the others, you know, there was sort of, there was bits and pieces. And then for most of them, there was a script. So we were talking about that and improvisation and how you do it. And he asked, you know, do you shoot two cameras? You know, just stuff like that, which was good because he was learning about what I'd like as a filmmaker. So that clearly clicked. And then we sort of met up. So we have an agreement, sort of, I have to write a feature length screenplay. And then we'll see. Fingers crossed, it happens. It's very early days, pun intended.
Yeah.
But I'm just sort of jotting down dialogue ideas. I've got certain deadlines, and it's just it's a tricky one to get my head around because it's I've always done things backwards. So like the feature film is no different in the sense that I know certain things, so I sort of know a rough budget and I know a rough sort of like I'm going to be in it, and I know so I know a sort of a style as well, but then it's writing for that, so it's interesting and exciting, and I've just got to get writing a lot.
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, it just shows a really great progression, and I don't know, just proof of sort of like what I believe is, you're good, you make me feel like I believe in the right thing. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. Just making stuff yourself. Like that is so, so nice to see that paying off in this way for you.
Yeah. No, thank you. I think I've definitely got lucky as well. Like I've definitely got lucky. Because I don't send stuff out, you know, like I don't have an agent. I've never approached an agent. And I think my persistence and sort of, again, it, like you said before, it is the little things, you know, because most people, they wouldn't send the short film to Liverpool Film Night. They'd try and send it to Encounters or they'd send it to Aesthetica. And then they wouldn't go on the North West Talent Program because they would think it was bullshit and it was beneath them. And why do I need to go to see these speakers once a month? You know, because the thing is, that was sort of, it sounds silly, but that was a big investment for me because it was like 15 quid to get to Liverpool. Yeah. And I was coming back sometimes like quite late, and I was going fairly early. I was going at like 5 p.m. and then coming back at like 11, you know, so it's like, it's half a day sort of thing. And, but it did majorly pay off because I learned a lot through the sessions. And then obviously I got the funding. And then the feature thing obviously come out of the back of that. So which you could never predict. But yeah, I guess that's what I'd also challenge other filmmakers to do. Don't just do the archaic route of make a short film and send it to a festival, because, you know, that's what everyone's doing.
Yeah. Robert Rodriguez says, when people zig, you have to zag. Like, because the problem is like everyone's trying to get into those certain film festivals. There's just far too much competition. Even just go by the numbers, like in terms of like funding schemes as well, there's far, like the big ones, there's so much competition, so try and find another way around it, I guess, is the only advice I can give, really. Okay, man, I mean, so I've just got one more question and I've got a quick fire round, which I don't know I've told you about.
All right, nice.
So I just want to know influences outside of filmmaking, so any sort of books you read, any sort of podcasts or anything like that?
Well, I've recently got big into Joe Rogan.
Me too. Where did that come from? That's weird, because I have as well.
I think I've all, well, cause I am a fan of UFC.
Yeah.
And I knew he did a podcast on the side, but I just never really took the time to listen to it. But then I listened to the one with Guy Ritchie.
That was amazing, wasn't it? When they're talking about suits and stuff, and I was like, I'm weirdly want to wear a suit now. I want to brew my own beer. What's going on?
Yeah. I mean, I felt less of a man, if that's possible. Like at the end of it, I was like, oh God. But Joe Rogan is a pretty manly man. Just fascinating, you know, he's talking to fascinating people. And the thing that I was annoyed at with the Guy Ritchie podcast is there wasn't a lot on filmmaking, which was a little bit frustrating, you know, because I wanted to get sort of deep into that. I think I mean, Tim Ferriss, I know you're a big fan of Tim Ferriss as well. And
yeah.
I think his podcast with Robert Rodriguez.
Have you listened to that one?
It was great. Yeah, yeah. I thought that was amazing.
Yeah.
Just, I wish Robert Rodriguez would make more feature films as well and do more stuff. But he seems to be a bit, like, not that prolific really at the moment. Or maybe that's just the perception thing. Podcasts, I'm not massive on podcasts. And then books. I mean, I did a creative writing MA, so I was reading a lot of fiction for like 2 years, a lot of short stories.
Anything like genre, or is it more literary fiction, or any sort of authors that stand out?
Definitely more literary fiction. Simon Rich is brilliant.
I love Simon Rich. Yeah.
Very, very funny. Ben Lerner is a favorite of mine as well. He's got a book called Leaving the Atocha Station.
Yeah.
Which is really great. Very biographical, because it's about his time in Spain as like a poet, like in residence. So that's really interesting and funny and like beautifully written. And to be honest, weirdly at the moment, I've been really banging to nonfiction, like business books, like entrepreneurial books. Because filmmaking is one big business, and I think I've got the creative side down to a T, or that's a strength. Whereas the business side and the industry side is just, I'm not totally clueless, but I'm just trying to learn. And I think Mark Duplass is like a massive, like, hero of mine.
Yeah.
And just the way he operates, I like that. I like the way he operates. And I think if I can be a British of equivalent, that would be a good goal. So I've been reading, like, I've just read Phil Knight's memoir about Nike.
Shoe Dog.
Yeah,
been recommended really before. Good. Yeah.
Well, because I think as well, reading it, when you're like, the guy's worth 27 billion or something stupid. And but he started off buying shoes in Japan for $1,000.
Yeah.
You know, and 500 of that was a loan off his dad.
Yeah.
And I just think you can always, you can always see the parallels, and it's the same with, I went to see a Kubrick exhibition in Krakow a couple of years ago, and that was so inspiring because I'd read that, like, his dad and his uncle basically funded his first two feature films.
Yeah.
So people think of Stanley Kubrick as this amazing, incredible sort of figure, and you know, you can even probably YouTube, like, what great filmmakers think of Stanley Kubrick, and it will just be 10 minutes of people, you know, lavishing praise. But then, you know, he really started in the most, you know, meager way. So again, it's not where you start, is it?
I'll tell you a book that I would recommend for you. And it may sound a little out of field, but have you ever heard of the Arnold Schwarzenegger book, Total Recall?
I've not.
Okay.
I've not read it. I have heard about it.
Okay. In line with, like, the Joe Rogan sort of podcast and that sort of manly element, like, there's, so that book, Total Recall, is Arnie's life, where he came from, when he came to America, and, like, all of his sort of, it's incredibly inspiring, because he was a millionaire well before he was a film star, from building businesses from the ground up and all this kind of thing, and he is like an incredible guy. Like, I think people sort of write him off a little bit now because he's almost a caricature of himself nowadays. But I definitely recommend that to anyone, really. I think I've read it about 4 or 5 times now. And it's a big book.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I do need to get that one then. Because he's ridiculous. Like, when you think of what he's achieved. And, like, I read somewhere that he missed his dad's funeral. I don't know if this is in the book.
It is, yeah. Because he was doing a bodybuilding competition.
So did he actually miss his dad's funeral?
If it's on, I think, if I'm sure, I know he missed a funeral. Because so it's weird because I read that book and then I read The Psychopath Test by John Ronson fairly soon after. And I was like, Arnie ticks off a lot of these psychopath boxes. But, like, he's still kind of amazing, inspiring in a way. But okay, man, go on, sorry.
Well, I think somebody asked him in an interview, is it true that you missed your dad's funeral? Because you were going to miss one workout.
Yeah.
And he says, no, I was going to miss several workouts.
Yeah.
And I just thought that was a brilliant reply. Like, so he did miss his dad's funeral, but it was because he was going to miss, a couple of workouts.
Yeah.
Like traveling backwards and forwards. So I just thought that's like, I mean, and also everyone says that, you know, to be obsessed with something or to be great at something, you do have to be a little bit gone and a little bit of, you know.
Kilter. Yeah.
Yeah. So.
I bet Steven Soderbergh is a little bit that way.
Yes. 100%.
Yeah.
I think his book's called Getting Started or something.
Okay. I'm going to check that out.
He's got a book that's really good about it. And he's definitely, I'm sure he ticks off some of John Ronson's psychopath test. Yeah. I don't know how he sleeps. I think he must get like 3 hours a night.
That's all you need when you're obsessed with something and you've got a load of coffee. Okay. Yeah. Quick fire round. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Got like 3-4 seconds to answer these. Don't feel like you have to even think about it. Okay. Number one, George Lucas or Steven Spielberg?
Steven Spielberg.
Number two, Martin Scorsese or Conor McGregor in a fight, Queensbury rules?
You'd have to go with Conor McGregor.
Okay. Number three, beach weekend or city vacation?
At the moment, beach weekend.
Okay. Number four, fiction or non-fiction?
Fiction.
The last book you read?
Last book I read was called Super Bosses. Okay. And it was a non-fiction book about, some super bosses like Ralph Lauren.
This is going to be weird.
And Lorne Michaels.
This is going to be weird because we're literally just talking about books. But the last book you thought about?
Well, I guess Total Recall. I guess I've got to go out and buy that. Yeah.
Cool. The one creative you'd want to meet?
See, now this feels like a Darren Brown mind trick because now I want to say Steven Spielberg.
Okay. Biggest hobby outside of making films?
There's nothing. Sadly, there is nothing. And that is my problem.
You're weird, obsessed. You get 3 hours sleep a night. You tick off. How many do you think you took off on the psychopath test?
Quite a lot. Okay, because I read that book and I was like, yeah, this is a bit worrying.
Yeah,
but,
yeah. I did the same thing as well. Okay, favourite hot beverage?
Decaf coffee.
Yeah, interesting. Okay.
I get too jittery with full caffeine.
Okay. If you found yourself trapped in a burning school bus on a cliff edge in downtown Manchester, which superhero would you like to be rescued by? Don't ever think it.
Well, it would have to be Superman, wouldn't it?
It's weird because Superman's the first superhero. It's not even, I kind of hate him as a superhero, but he's always the first one that comes to mind. Okay, the last question, dude. Where can we follow you and your work?
On Twitter at HSheriff, and I have a Facebook page that's / Harry JJ Sheriff, which is where like early days is going to be put out. That's it, really. I've got a website, but it's not very good. HarrySheriff.com.
It's serviceable. It does the job.
Yeah.
Cool. So just a quick thanks to Disaster Piece for the intro and outro music, Acast for hosting the podcast, the listeners for listening, patrons over at patreon.com/HawkandCleaver, and thanks once again to our guests today. Thanks so much for coming on, Mr. Harry Sheriff. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Luke.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Story Studio podcast. Still hungering for some podcast goodness? Then why not check out our other show, The Other Stories? Oh, and did you know, every time you leave us a review in the iTunes store, a puppy is born. Cute, eh? Anyway, toodle pip.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.